Hi, Lisa. Thank you.
Hi, everybody.
And Roy Friedman worked with us from the beginning as we constructed this project. We also were blessed to have John Voga lend us his expertise with the statistical analysis, thank goodness. And Haley O'Neill was our research assistant. And last but not least, we want to thank our spouses, Kathy and Fred, for their support, their positive critique, and their editing skills. You know, it's nice to have talent in the family. We're going to slide two. And you see there, it's called Anatomy of a Research Project. So that's what we're going to take you through. Every research project comes from a place of curiosity, which then needs structure and flesh to be added to its bones to bring out understanding and results. Okay. So we're on slide three, which is the anatomy of a research project. Our basic structure for this research looks like this, as you see in front of it. We started with some assumptions, which are fundamental to coaching, and then solve some challenges. So this combination of assumptions and challenges leads us to our research question. Having the question that we wanted to gain some information about, we developed a tool which we call the Life Satisfaction Survey, or LSS for short, and then we tested it. The results of that study led us to some interesting data, more clarity, and even more questions. So let's move on to the next slide. Some of what I'm about to say will be very familiar to you. However, in understanding how we arrived at our research question and subsequent instruments, it's important to quickly review the operating platform from which we were working. We believe this operating platform is very important and should distinguish research done in the coaching profession from research done in other professions. So these assumptions that we're bringing to you, as I said, are familiar. They come from the IPF Code of Ethics, and we believe that each IPF certified coach agrees with all of these. So notice our assumptions and challenges are about our coaching clients, are about the coaching profession, about the coaching process, about the coach, and obviously the overlap between the some of the coaching and some other areas. So slide five. We wanted to look at how assessment instruments should be designed and used given the assumptions and paradigm of the coaching profession. So, here's our assumption about coaching clients as a whole, competent, capable, creative, resourceful, willing to take appropriate risks when they want to change. That our clients are independent and equal human beings. The self-understanding leads to good decisions about one's life, and that the client can and will do the work. Slide six. So about the coaching profession, our assumptions were the coaching profession is non-directive and exists to assist clients to produce extraordinary results in their lives, their careers, their businesses, and organizations. And that we exist as coaches to assist clients to deepen their learning, improve their performance, and enhance their quality of life. I just want to really emphasize these points because they're really at the heart of what we do within the profession. Slide seven. Here's our assumptions about the coaching process. If coaching is a learning and developmental model, it informs the process. It's future-oriented. The coaching process and each call is based on the client's agenda. The coaching process accelerates client progress, and the results are achieved produced by the client's choices and actions. Okay, the next slide. Our assumptions about the coach. It's our responsibility as a coach to understand and follow the coaching processes defined or sanctioned by ICF. We are to discover, clarify, and align with what the client wants to achieve. We want to, and I emphasize this, I want to highlight this, encourage client self-discovery. We want to elicit client-oriented ideas and strategies. We also want to hold the client accountable and responsible. By the way, in this early part, I'm just going through a lot of base stuff that supported our research. And then as we go further, please jot down questions as you go along so that, because we want to have some time for during discussion. Number nine. Notice here that we are looking at the three professions in which we notice there are some overlaps. So we have the coaching interface. So we have coaching there on the top. We have psychotherapy. We have consulting and mentoring. And what we found is that when coaches find themselves in the areas of overlap, oftentimes confusion and angst emerge. In that moment of overlap, coaches often revert to their previous way of managing or working with what the client brings, often moving out of the coaching model. This can also happen when using assessments produced for other professions. When they do, we are saying that it can contaminate the coaching. It takes us out of the coaching frame. So here are some concerns we had on slide 10. And our concerns were gleaned from our observations during teaching and mentoring supervisions from presentations we gave, most notably our previous presentations that we did at ICF conferences. One was entitled The Elephant in the Room, and the other was Squirrels in Your Attic. So obviously we're into animals, right? So in our work, coaches frequently ask about difficulties in these areas in local chapters, small group discussions, workshops, and private conversations. So what we were seeing was a need for something that could assist coaches to make better decisions about referring, be able to more comfortably have a conversation around high emotions or troublesome areas, and stay in the coaching frame even when being pulled by old professional paradigms. In the process of collecting observations and becoming aware of the need for some sort of guidance for coaches with high emotions and making referrals, we will be looking on the next slide at the mandates that were introduced into the ICF code. So here's where our concerns, just as a brief review. We saw that there was under-referring or over-referring to other professions happening. Coaches sometimes had difficulty dealing with high emotions, and that there was a contaminating of the coaching by slipping into previous ways of managing clients. And so, like I said, we were noticing this. Then, in January of 2005, the following mandate was printed in our code of ethics. Number 20 was, I will suggest my client seek the services of other professionals when deemed appropriate or necessary. And number 21 was, I will take all reasonable steps to notify the appropriate authorities in the event the client discloses an intention to endanger yourself or others. So for us, these mandates heightened our belief in the need for a tool that would give coaches more information about their clients, especially in areas that the clients might not bring up initially. As we were pondering this, we gave a presentation on some of these ideas. And in the energetic discussion that followed, some coaches said they did not want to know how troublesome areas in a client's life. One brave participant stood up and stated, go to the next slide, not knowing is not an excuse. So that, in other words, not knowing does not alleviate us as coaches of being aware of areas in a client's life that can impact them in negative ways. Furthermore, not knowing about what is operating in the background does impact the coaching and the coaching outcome. In fact, not knowing can lead to some serious consequences. Instead of needing to be rescued, we wanted to have coaches that could professionally and comfortably handle most coaching emergencies. Therefore, we believed that we needed to be holistic in our approach, since everything affects everything. So we began to ask ourselves, how can we become aware about areas which may not be in our usual realm of questions? This led us to the following question that then underpinned our research project. The question was, if not knowing is not an excuse, what do we as coaches need to know more clearly to be be of better service to our clients. So, as a group of concerned coaches, we pondered the question, and it became apparent to us that we needed an assessment tool. However, we wanted that tool to assist and inform clients and coaches alike. And so, if you go to the next slide, slide 14, here's what we came up with. Our response was to develop a tool that is holistic, increases insights about clients' lives, flags concerns that may need referring, highlights strengths and areas for growth, and stimulates the coaching conversation. So notice that such a tool would uphold the coaching assumptions and mandates that we looked at a few minutes ago. So as we move to the next slide, which is of the development of the life satisfaction survey, and here are some of the criteria or what we wanted the life satisfaction survey to do. We'll look at satisfaction in several areas, to open the coaching conversation. We wanted to highlight areas that may need a referral while not being diagnostic. We wanted to identify strengths and areas for growth. We wanted to show change or development over time, and we wanted to be transparent. Let me give you a little bit of background here. Assessment tools and other professions have looked at how clients view themselves in certain situations, such as some of you may know if you're psychology, into psychology, such as the Beck Depression Inventory, and obviously some anxiety skills that are out there. From a coaching perspective, we wanted a tool that gave clients the opportunity to assess themselves over a broad category of life circumstances. We believe that this would give both the client and the coach the opportunity to address areas of strength and areas for growth. It would also give the coach information about troublesome areas in the client's life, areas that they might not necessarily ask about. Since, as coaches, we're not operating as clinicians and therefore are not licensed to diagnose, we wanted this instrument to open coaching conversations about areas troubling either the coach or the client while not being diagnosed. We believe these coaching conversations could inform the coach and the client about the possibility of the need for a referral to another professional, thus upholding the mandates of the ICF Code of Ethics. Being transparent was also important to us. Being transparent meant that both the client and the coach had the same information and could review the results together within a coaching conversation. Many other effective tools, such as the MMPI or the Myers-Briggs, etc., have this kind of mysterious quality about them, in that a person responds to all the statements, and then at the end, they're told that they're such and such a type, or they have such and such a malady or diagnosis. Furthermore, this information was usually only given to the person requesting the assessment, thus maintaining a one-up, one-down relationship with the client. As coaches who are in equal partnership with our clients, we did not want an instrument that gave us information that our clients did not often have. So since coaching believes that clients are the expert on their life and work, we want an instrument to be a tool for clients as well as the coaches. So as we were talking about developing this LSS, we also wondered about possible differences between coaching clients and psychotherapy clients, and between coaches and psychotherapists. So let's go to the next slide, that's slide 16, where we look at the development of the scale. Using our team of coaches, we explored the wheel of life and we brainstormed specific areas that we believed would be important to know about our clients, given that clients want to construct a meaningful and satisfying life. These are the six areas we came up with: cognitive functioning or thinking, decision making, movement towards goals, the capacity for pleasure, emotions such as guilt, anger, depression, hopelessness, and anxiety, and self-care and daily functioning. From these areas, we constructed items reflecting each area, so we developed well over 100 statements that individuals could respond to. And their response would say how similar or dissimilar each statement was to them. And they had, it was a Likert scale, we'll get into it some more, and they had five possible responses. And in looking at our vast array of statements, we consolidated similar statements and discovered them that were too esoteric or unclear. So this process resulted in 100 items. We randomized these items to create a research instrument. And later we'll look at what actually emerged from the data and if our original statements were relevant. Excuse me. So, slide 17. First, a website was constructed where individuals could go and confidentiality. So, notice we invited coaches, psychotherapists, clients, the general public to take the LSS. Each person was given the opportunity to receive their results and to have the results sent to their coach or therapist. After we gathered the results, we began the tedious process of ascertaining what had meaning for the subjects and what didn't. The high number of responses allowed us to use factor analysis, a statistical form of analyzing data, to tell us what patterns existed in the data. So notice we ended up with 280 subjects, and we used factor analysis. So now we're going to go to the results, and I turn it over to Tom.
Well, thanks, Lynn. Slide 18, we're going to start looking at the results of the actual research study that we conducted. And on slide 19, we're going to start looking about what we discovered. In doing a factor analysis, so we'll be going over the six different factors that emerged in our analysis. We looked and found six empirically derived areas of satisfaction that have an effect on coaching goals, process, and outcome. So this really resulted in an instrument designed by coaches for coaches that exists this process of clients looking at their experience with their coach without diagnosing them. Now let's go to slide 20. We're representing those six areas that we constructed items for the LSS because those are six areas that we felt were very important in the coaching process. Now, what was really interesting was that the factor analysis actually showed six different patterns that didn't necessarily match exactly these areas that we constructed items in. And so that's what we're going to be looking at today. If you go to slide 21, remember we had 100 satisfaction items, and we had 286 people who responded to the survey, which resulted in 28,600 data points, which, you know, one of the first questions that arose for us are, what patterns exist in their answers, in terms of people actually filling the survey out? And factor analysis is a tool that can help us look at patterns in the data. And so now we're going to look at the six different scales that emerged from the factor analysis. And that starts on slide 22. So on slide 22, it shows the six scales that emerged. And then we're going to be going over each one in detail. Lynn and I will be sharing going over these. In fact, let's just go over them one by one rather than listing them all here. What I'd like you to do is go to slide 23, and I'd like to talk a little bit about the factor analysis first. For those of you who aren't familiar with factor analysis, what factor analysis does is it looks for patterns in the data, like which items have the highest correlation to each other, and then it gathers a set of items that have the highest correlation to each other, and it calls that a factor because it's those items statistically hang together as all relating to some underlying thing that's being measured. That's the correlation of the items indicate. And that first pattern that emerged in the factor analysis consisted of 31 items of the 100 items. And as we looked over the content of those items, we realized that this primary scale that emerged actually had to do with life satisfaction and motivation. It contained items like, I'm satisfied with my life, I'm really motivated to do what I want. And if you go to slide 24, you'll see this. We felt like this slide indicates general satisfaction and drive in life. At a low score, I indicate disappointment in a person's life or a lack of motivation. Now, before we go to the second scale that Lynn's going to describe, I want to talk a little bit more about the factor analysis. Because this first factor was 31 items. So the factor analysis then takes those 31 items and it removes them from the 100, leaving 69, right?
Yes.
69 items. So now you've got 69 items. And what the factor analysis does is, now it looks for a pattern among those 69 items. And if it finds a pattern, then it isolates those items. And that's the second scale that we're going to talk about now.
Yeah, and that second scale noted, out of the 69, the factor analysis searched those 69 and came up with another grouping, a grouping of 20 items. And as we looked at that, we noticed that these 20 items related to positive emotions and self-control. So these three items were related to things like being relaxed, feeling good about oneself, and obviously able to demonstrate self-control. So couple of the statements in this category were, I feel calm, or I worry too much, or I react too strongly to others. Now, notice that if a person was scoring themselves that this was like them, it would suggest an ability to effectively handle and express negative emotions, and also that they were feeling pretty good about themselves. So notice if a person was saying, this isn't like me, and we'll get into that some more, and they overall assess themselves at a low score, it would indicate that there might be some growth needed in understanding and in working effectively with emotions, especially in relationships. Okay, Tom.
If we remove those 20 items, now I mean the math, 49 items remain. And the factor analysis goes back and starts looking for another pattern. And on slide 27, 11 items emerged from the factor analysis. As we looked at those, they really had an element of interpersonal confidence as a theme in those items. So there are 11 items in that pattern. And there are items like, it's easy to make friends, or I enjoy meeting people. And if you look on slide 28, as we looked at those items, we feel like that indicates a comfort with relationships in general. And low scores might indicate a desire for improved relationships with others. When we remove those, the next factor actually had 15 items. If you look on slide 29, the content of those items had to do with concentration and freedoms for self-limiting beliefs. So there were items like, it's easy for me to stay focused, or I can never make up my mind. And those kind of items we felt indicated a comfort, if you look on slide 30, a comfort with the ability to make decisions, overcome obstacles, follow through and achieve reasonable goals. We're suggesting that low scores on this scale indicates the need to explore obstacles that may be interfering with goal setting and achievement.
Okay, if you move on to the next slide, which is slide 31, you'll notice that we're down now. We don't have a lot of statements left, but we have five that group together around diet and exercise. So this is oriented to healthy diet and exercise, and included such questions as, I enjoy exercise, or I have a problem with my eating, which can be very informative. People that scored high on this would indicate a general satisfaction with this area of their life, and would suggest the presence of diet and exercise. Low scores in this area might say that the client wants to benefit from new insights and behaviors about healthy diet and exercise. And by the way, in the paper, we're more clearly defining what we mean by healthy diet and exercise. So I'm not going to go into that right now. And finally, the final four statements grouped around sleep quality. Now, as you can imagine, sleep can be related to stress and how one deals with life in general. And so these only four items, though, are very important because a client can say, I have difficulty getting to sleep, or perhaps they worry about whether they're going to be able to sleep. And if you go on to slide 34, if a client scores themselves as not having any difficulty in these areas, it would indicate satisfaction. And low scores may be an indicator, and this is where the coaching conversation really kicks in, as you talk to the client about it, to find out what do they mean by the sleep disturbance and all this sort of stuff. But they might need to have this explored further, perhaps in a sleep clinic. We don't know. But you're talking, using the coaching conversation would help bring this into the foreground. Okay. So how can the research on the Life Satisfaction Survey actually be applied? So you've kind of seen how we came up with the 6-minute scale. It didn't exactly match what we originally thought, but it still came up with some very interesting ideas. The things that can be accomplished with LSS is on slide 36. We can create client awareness. It takes the coaching conversation to a deeper level because as the coach and the client, you're looking at this together and you're really exploring. It can highlight various areas of strength and areas for growth. And we'll be giving you some anecdotal material on that as well as some statistical stuff in a minute. It can provide information comparing your coaching client to the general population. So we call that the norms data, and that was another thing that came out of this research. And it can inform the coach and client about possible referrals. And so Tom is now going to talk about two case studies. So the case of Jackie and the case of Jason.
Thank you, Lynn. So we're going to go over two actual cases here where the Life Satisfaction Survey has been used. We're going to go over the actual results and talk a little bit about how that fit into the coaching process for each one of them. 37 introduces both cases, and we're going to jump right to slide 38 and talk about Jackie, which, of course, the names have been changed here for these individuals to protect their anonymity. Jackie was the president of her own cooking company, and she was self-referred to coaching because she was not as motivated in her life as she wanted to be. On slide 39, we're going to go over the different Likert responses that are available for the 100 items on the test because they're helpful in understanding the results. Each item of the 100 items on the Life Satisfaction Survey, a person chooses whether that statement is never like them, which is a 1, all the way to always like me, which is a 5. And so the person goes through and answers all of those. And then if you look on page 40, you'll actually see the results for Jackie. She was 38 years old at the time she took the Life Satisfaction Survey. And as you look down the scores, you can see the 6 different scales that were developed from the factor analysis. And on each scale, the top line is the population mean. That's the average score for the general population. And then you'll see below that the blue line that indicates where Jackie's score for her life satisfaction, her score was 3.74. And then you'll see kind of a line drawn out in both directions from that 3.74. And that indicates 1 standard deviation on both sides of that mean score for her. So that kind of gives an indication about how much does her score actually vary from the general adult population. As we look down on her scores, you can see that almost all of her scores are pretty much right in alignment with the general population, with the exception of the last one on sleep quality. Now, if you go to slide 41, the other thing that is discussed and is provided in the report that is generated for the Life Satisfaction Survey are extreme items that were endorsed of the 100 items that the person answered. And any item that was answered as a 1 or a 5 is listed out so that specific item content can be illustrated back to the coach and the coaching client to help with the conversation. Now, if you look on page 41, here's the first set of some of the items that he endorsed. Questions like, when I think about the future, I feel hopeless. What you said was, that's never like me. And I'm just dragging through life, never like me. As well as life has gotten in the way of me achieving my goals, never like me. So those are all positive items in the direction she answered them in the area of life satisfaction or motivation. And if you go into slide 42, there's a few more of these. Like, I experienced joy. I'm never really happy. She said, that's never like me. And the work environment provides opportunities for growth, and I really enjoy my life. And what was really interesting was, as Jackie was going over those, what she really noticed was, you know, I've got a lot of positive things going on in my life. And she noticed that by the general score, that her scores were very similar to the adult population, as well as these specific items, where it was really a high level of satisfaction in general in her life. It's just there was some difficulty she wanted to approach in the coaching, and that gave a context to that. Because as she saw those areas where she had a lot of satisfaction, it really helped realize how excited and energized she was about running her own company, and that she was really motivated in life to take challenges as an opportunity. So that really helped kind of jumpstart the coaching conversation in terms of looking at the things she wanted to work on. On slide 43, the positive statements about interpersonal confidence. She has a lot of friends, so many she can't keep up with them. And friendships are important to her. They're really highly valued for her. So if we go on to slide 44, Jackie was really excited and energized by her LSS results. And she hadn't really realized the extent of her strengths until she had them reflected back to her through her results on the survey. And those positive results really invigorated her and helped her move forward. If we go on to page 45, or slide 45, the positive statement that Jackie had about her diet and exercise, too. I never exercise is never like me. And that she enjoyed exercise. And in fact, that was one of the first areas that we focused on, because even though she had a high level of feeling good about those sorts of things, she had fallen away from some of her diet and exercise patterns. And that was one of the things we focused on early on in the coaching, is just helping her reestablish some of the past healthy behaviors she had had in those areas. And that was one of the first areas that she really started to tackle and immediately started putting into effect. If you look on page 46, one of the areas that was flagged in the negative direction was in the area of her diet and exercise, where she said, I have a problem with my eating, and she said, it's almost always like her. On page 47, you know, we started to focus on that in the coaching, and, you know, just in the coaching conversation, we started realizing she had gained about 15 pounds and drifted away from that pattern of working out, and that she had a recent relationship that was growing real quickly in a real satisfied way. She was really liking this guy she had met. But what she found is that as that relationship developed, she had started losing some of those personal positive habits that she had, like her diet and exercise. So we immediately set some goals. If you look on page 48, we immediately set some goals. She started implementing them. And what we found was that she immediately started reestablishing those habits and started creating more balance in her life between her personal needs and her relationship. And her boyfriend really supported her in these changes, and that was further affirmation about how good the relationship was for her. So there really began to be a synergy here between her kind of reclaiming those things that were important to herself and really continue working on this relationship and that relationship growing in her life. So that's the case of Jackie.
Can I just add something here? I think one of the important things I want to just point out here is that when Jackie came for coaching, she did not come with the idea of working on her diet and exercise. and said that it was the life satisfaction survey that highlighted this area of concern for her. That she, so, as we said in the beginning, that we were looking for the LSS really kind of bring to the foreground some areas that maybe the client hadn't talked about when they came to you, and this is one of those cases. So I just wanted to highlight that because she hadn't mentioned that when she first came, but with the LSS, she got clear about it and did something. Thanks, Tom.
Thank you, Lynn.
Mm-hmm.
Let's move on to the case of Jack, of Jason. Jason, on page, I think I'll just say page for the rest of the time here. Slide 49, Jason was referred to me by an employee assistance professional where he worked. He's a federal employee. And his, on slide 50, Jason was described by the IT professionals having poor eye contact and not having effective interpersonal or assertiveness skills. And the EAP professional was really concerned about him. I talked to him, and he took the life satisfaction survey, and that was one of the first things we went over in our coaching conversation. And those results are on slide 51. And when I first looked at these life satisfaction results, I thought, whoa, this is really interesting. Because one of the first things I noticed was that five of the six scales were significantly lower than the general population. And that immediately made me curious about what I was going to find in meeting Jason, since these were the lowest scores I had seen for anyone taking the life satisfaction survey. And it looked like somebody was really dissatisfied with his life. On page 52, or slide 52, we started looking at more of the specific content in the different areas. There were positive statements that Jason endorsed, though, like in the area of satisfaction or life motivation. He was saying questions like, I wish I wasn't here. He said, never like me. Can't stop crying. Never like me. And regarding concentration and self-limiting beliefs, he said he really enjoyed success. And that he never worried about being able to go to sleep, that his sleep quality was good by his own report on the survey. On slide 53, we're looking at some of the negative statements that he made about himself. In satisfaction in life or motivation, he's saying he never really feels fulfilled. And he felt like no one ever listens to him. In the area of concentration and self-limiting beliefs, he said that almost always unrelated thoughts knocks him off his focus. On slide 54, we can look at some of the areas of interpersonal confidence for him. And some of the things he said in that area was that having the family is never like him. I have so many friends I can't keep up with them. Just the opposite of Jackie. He said that's never like him. And regarding outgoing when meeting people, he said that's never like him. So here was a theme where the interpersonal confidence in particular really was causing some problems for him. And if we go to page 50, slide 55, as Jason and I started exploring, especially the interpersonal confidence items, what really started emerging was his lifelong struggle in relating to others. Jason had been picked on a lot growing up. He had really learned to kind of withdraw from people. We also started uncovering a lot of fears he had about effectively working with others in the workplace. And he could see that these kind of problems he was having were a real threat to possible career advancement. In fact, he had been working for about 5 years for the federal agency he had been in, and he didn't have any advances during the whole 5 years. He'd seen some of them getting some advances, and he was getting really frustrated because his career just wasn't moving the way he wanted to. He started recognizing that these were some of the areas where he struggled that might be holding him back. So on slide 56, Jason and his coach created goals around improving personal work behavior and improving interpersonal work relationships. because we really saw those things as central to his life satisfaction survey and the things he was bringing to the coaching. On slide 57, another really important thing that came out of the life satisfaction survey was the level of dissatisfaction that he had in his life and kind of how unhappy he was. And that was really utilized in the coaching in a very important way for him, because it really opened a conversation around, at some point, was there going to be a need for a future referral, especially if the coach, for some reason, wasn't able to help him move forward. Like, if the level of his dissatisfaction really got in the way of the coaching. And we were able to talk about that in a really clear kind of way, so that if there was a need for a future referral, that wouldn't be a surprise to him if that conversation came up again. But in the meantime, he really proceeded with the coaching and really looked at those goals that he wanted to focus on and started really finding specific things to do. Let me give you an example. Jason had a real tendency to kind of isolate at work. So we talked a lot about the kinds of interpersonal skills that might be helpful to him to work more effectively with others. And in one of the coaching sessions, he came in and he was really pretty excited because he said, you know, it was the most amazing thing. He had been at work and he noticed a photograph of one of his coworkers on the desks. And this is a coworker that he hardly knew and really made a lot of negative assumptions about this person in the workplace. So he just noticed that photograph on the person's desk to the person, and the person opened up and had a whole conversation around this person's family. And Jason was really kind of struck by this, and it really humanized this person as a coworker, and really putting them much more at ease in terms of working with him. And we were able to look at that as an example of things that he could do and needed to do to really develop better relationships with his coworkers that would translate into better working relationships as well. So that was just one example of some of the things we worked on. And he really started making progress. And some of the positive things on the life satisfaction survey really started that he had strengths that maybe weren't immediately obvious. And that once we focused on some of those strengths and we did it in a coach-like way, he was actually able to move forward and work on specific goals at work that really helped him start progressing. Let's see. Lynn, do you have any thoughts on Jason here before we continue on?
I think the other thing that you had mentioned, too, at one point is that he actually went to his supervisor to talk about what he needed to do to move forward in his career.
Okay. Thanks, Lynn. Yeah, let me just go over that real quickly. He really felt stuck in his career, and as we problem-solved that, I started challenging him to look for the resources he had at work, and his manager was one of those. There were some indications that this manager had been looking out for him and had some done some things that she was a support to him. So I challenged him to go to that person. And this is in the federal system, so people talking about wanting promotions and transfers and stuff like that, it's pretty common in the federal system. So he went to him and just said, you know, here's some of the things, places I want to be in the future. And she actually took about an hour of her time sitting down with him and talking and really essentially mentoring him, giving him ideas of what to do, and really became a real support to him. And that was a really important behavior on his part because it really strengthened his relationship with her. And the other thing that was really interesting was, you know, when I looked at his life satisfaction surveys and we talked about it, I really kind of had some questions about Jason's emotional intelligence, like how well he functioned in relationships. But what was really interesting to me when we were talking about him going to the supervisor that way is I asked him, well, how did he end that conversation? And you know, how did he end it? And when he talked about that, there were a lot of real strengths that came out that wouldn't have been really apparent with Jason just looking at his history and the way he presented, because he said he really thanked his supervisor for helping him. You know, he asked her if there were more he could be doing to help her, and he engaged in a lot of behaviors that really strengthened the relationship. You know, it was as much give as it was take for him in that interchange. And we talked talked about that a lot in terms of how that, those are the kinds of skills that build relationships and create opportunity in a current position he's in or in developing that future position he wants to be in.
Yeah, and Tom, another thing you had said was at the beginning of working with Jason, you know, you had some real questions, even some of how he told himself, about whether he would be an appropriate coaching client. But you gave him the benefit of the doubt, and you had already set up a future referral if he needed it. Can you fill us in on how you see him now?
You know, Jason made a lot of progress, and there hasn't been that need for a referral. But we're continuing to work. He did experience a setback because he applied for one position and it wasn't given. And he kind of had a setback in the disappointment he was having. And actually, that the coaching session around that really started looking at how he deals with setbacks. Because we looked at how there's a tendency in the past when he had a setback, he would engage in a lot of self-defeating behavior after that. And instead of being able to recover from a setback and continue moving forward. So the coaching right now has been focusing on him, you know, like recovering from that setback and realizing, you know, you still have these future goals. Let's work towards them and let's look at some of the ways that you might be actually engaging in self-defeating behavior if you're able to recover from that setback and move forward.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That's cool. So let's move on then to slide 58, and I think these two cases that Tom has presented for us will kind of show us both ends of the spectrum here, the client and how they scored themselves, and just some key points about the Life Satisfaction Survey and doing research. Is that empirical method can really be used to develop coaching tools. And we put it together, then we tested it to see if we were on track or not. And so we would really appreciate more of this kind of working within the coaching community. Also, we believe that assessment tools can further the coaching process. And Tom has given us some really wonderful examples of how using the Life Satisfaction Survey, and there are other assessment tools that can further the coaching process, but in this case, how it really could want to see an area they hadn't thought about before, or in Jason's case, having this conversation, coaching conversation about referrals, that can also bring him back to then the coaching process and what he wants to design. The Life Satisfaction Survey also lends itself to continuously staying in the coaching model. So that when you're in an area of overlap, I mean, I could see it as a therapist how I could easily fall into that area of overlap with Jason. But if we stay within and use the satisfaction survey, we can stay right in the coaching model and not get pulled into asking our usual therapy questions. Also, the Life Satisfaction Survey has been proven beneficial as a tool to flag areas of strength, if you saw areas of growth, and possible areas for referral. And what I want to say here about referral is when we're talking referral, we're not just talking about referrals to a mental health professional. We want to look at referrals across a full range of other professional services. So that it could be things like nutritionists or doctors or lawyers or financial advisors or body work professionals, just to name a few. And that the Life Satisfaction Survey can empower the coach to more confidently assist the client in discerning whether a referral would be in their best interest. So Tom, we'll look at future research questions.
Slide 59. We, doing this research, have really raised some questions here that we'd really like to encourage the coaching profession to look at more and that we may be exploring ourselves. We'd like to see more tools designed for the coaching profession that are empirically developed and kind of developed specifically with the coaching conversation in mind. I'm also curious about how satisfaction surveys measure coaching efficacy and outcomes. The survey we developed, the Life Satisfaction Survey, you know, something that can be taken by people and initially in the coaching, but it's something they can take later on as well to look at some kind of progress that they've made in terms of how satisfied they are in the different areas that are measured. And then also, one of the places that we're going to be looking next effects, and we already have some data on, is the differences between coaching clients and psychotherapy clients. We're really curious about, you know, is there really a difference in life satisfaction between coaching clients and psychotherapy clients? And if there is or there isn't, there's going to be some important implications that it has for the coaching profession, as well as the relationship between the coaching profession and the mental health profession. So, and then finally, we're also curious about what effect life satisfaction surveys, or surveys in general, could have in terms of initiating the coaching process, and then later on influencing the outcome. In the couple cases that I presented, the life satisfaction survey seemed very helpful in terms of helping formulate goals and helping people identify strengths and areas they want to work. So we'd like to look more at the kind of impact that can have on coaching outcomes.
One, Tom, just to mention another one we're thinking about, too, is in taking the life satisfaction survey, are there differences between coaches and psychotherapists in their, how they rank their life satisfaction? Just another little one we're playing with. If you move on to slide 60, some resources for coaches. So if you find yourself working with your clients, we just wanted to offer a couple resources that we see for coaches. Certainly mentor coaches, especially those who have a psychotherapy or referral background, and that can assist you in determining, even at least having a discussion, so that you can get clear about how to approach the topic with your client. And obviously the TIG, so we put in kind of our advertisement, our unabashed advertising for the coaching and psychotherapy community that you're on today. And for information, you can go to slide 61. We would be delighted to speak with you. We'd also be delighted to talk to you about having your coaching clients take the life satisfaction survey, either at the beginning, the middle, the end, whatever you would like to have your clients do that. And last but not least, on slide 62, thanks for being curious and being in the question with us. And by the way, that slide on the bottom, I will let Tom tell you how he got that picture.
That's at the World Series celebration here in St. Louis. So one of the Cardinals in that truck going down Market Street right in downtown St. Louis, which some of you were just off of that if you were at the ICF conference in November.
Yeah. So that culminates our presentation, and now we just want to be open to questions or comments, discussion with you.
This is Lisa. Unfortunately, I got to drop off because it's 3 o'clock. So thank you for a great presentation.
Thanks
for being here, Lisa. Anybody else have comments or impressions?
Tom, this is Glenn.
Yeah, Glenn.
I had a question about any questions revolving around practices in terms of how maybe their spiritual practices or their spiritual purpose, meaning, etc., affected their life satisfaction. Was that ever considered, or was that ever discussed in the development of the instrument?
Glenn, you want to answer that?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, we got to the end and we realized there were two areas that we had left out, and so they are now being part of our new survey, and we're gathering data on that as right now.
And actually, what happened was there were 100 items went to the factor analysis, and 16 of those items were eliminated as a result of the factor analysis, Glenn.
Uh-huh.
And so we could have had a scale that was 16 items less, but what we decided to do is we decided to develop two additional scales that we don't have empirical research on, but we do report back to people taking the survey. And one of those scales is on career satisfaction. The other one is on spirituality.
Oh, great.
So we actually constructed 8 items around spirituality, and we feedback an average score for the person on those 8 items. And then we also, again, if there's an extreme item either in any of those 8 items, we report it back to the person in that area as well.
Great.
So thanks for bringing that up.
I'll pay you $20 next week for asking that question, Glenn.
Okay.
Yep.
Great call. Thanks, Diana.
Thanks, Diana. Good seeing you.